Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back. Actually, we got two guys back from LAPD. We have former commander, LAPD, Lieutenant Jeff Weninger, and he is also at jeffweninger.com. He's got a book, if you're watching the video portion of the show, a book called On Thin Ice that's going to be coming out. You get more information about that coming up at jeffweninger.com, On Thin Ice. And it's going to be something special. And also, not to be outdone, we've got Lieutenant Chuck Springer, also from LAPD. The difference between the two, when Jeff retired, he moved back to Ohio, and Chuck came over to be with me in Florida. So one's obviously smarter than the other, but hey, I love it. There's a good banter going on. It's going to be a great show. A shout out to our sponsors, guys. Our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. Our satellite sponsor, thanks to Compliant Technologies. We're on satellite radio right now. We're wrapping up our third week on satellite, actually. Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. We're reaching 1.5 million people right now, thanks to them. And Two Bells, they built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. We are going to be giving a giveaway today for Two Bells as well. A shout out to Brian Birch with the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. They are in the news. We're covering what's going on because of Tampa Free Press. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And we are thanks to them, we are streaming to 1.5 million people as well. So what in the world are we going to be talking about today, guys? We've got a breaking article. DOJ nixes Phoenix police investigation. They retract findings amid false reporting controversy. This was exposed, and it has been being exposed by Major Travis Yates, one of our very own. And then there's a subheadline, another one from really another article, DOJ scraps lawsuits against Louisville and Minneapolis police, and they retract Biden-era findings. Wow. So we're talking about, there's a whole new world with consent decrees now. Because I posed a question earlier this week when Travis was on the show talking about this, like, is the Trump DOJ going to be different than the Biden DOJ as far as going in and taking over agencies? Jeff, you were on the show. And so this headline is like, great. I can't wait to get into this. This will be our first story. And then we've got some other ones. Governor Reynolds signs law getting rid of citizen police review boards. But also in the same breath, while they're getting rid of them in Iowa, we got Minneapolis Police Department. They're bringing civilians to lead internal affairs and constitutional policing bureaus. So highly controversial stuff. And then we're going to go to some stories with video components. We got footage release of a Austin police officer fatally shooting a man in a wheelchair who's wielding a BB gun. And we're going to be taking these out of order because Jeff's already put in a request. We've got a Belmont officer charged with rape. He was not a U.S. citizen. He was here on a work permit. And he had a 2017 domestic violence arrest, and the agency hired him anyhow. That was California. Then we got Johnson police officer shooting a suspect who hit an officer with their vehicle while trying to flee. And then finally, deputy body cam footage shows a deadly shooting of a wanted registered sex offender in DeSoto County. I think that's going to end up being our first video that we cover. And guys, are you? This is going to be some good stuff. You guys have your seatbelts on? You ready to go? All right, I can tell. All right, let's see. Let's see. I can't wait to get into this first one. All right. So the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com, they started this thing off and they got it. They just put this thing out there, got picked up by MSN. And it all got started by Dr. Travis Yates, retired major from Tulsa Police Department. And he was doing some fact finding for the Phoenix Police Department. So here we go. A significant shift in the Department of Justice's, the DOJ's approach to police oversight was announced on Wednesday as the Civil Rights Division revealed that it would be closing investigations and retracting findings of constitutional violations against police departments in Phoenix. They start off with Phoenix. These are the guys that said no to the federal consent decree and said, yeah, you know what? We're not going to let you in. And so Phoenix police, that's the first agency mentioned. Then we got Trenton and New Jersey. We got Memphis, Tennessee, Mount Vernon police in New York. We got Oklahoma City police in Oklahoma and then the Louisiana State Police. So the decision comes amidst a burgeoning controversy amplified by retired police commander and author Travis Yates. So Yates, through an independent review of the DOJ's investigation to the Phoenix Police Department, he found out that 97% of the findings that they had slamming the Phoenix Police Department that they were false. They weren't true. They were lies. And this is in the federal agency summary report. So the DOJ's. Now, we're talking really about the Biden DOJ, but the DOJ's report had previously claimed to identify a pattern of practice of civil rights violations within the Phoenix police force. And so Travis blew the lid off of that. Even after that, we have other agencies that have been complying with the government's takeover of their agency. And of course, we know now that there's millions and millions of dollars that are being paid from the agency to the DOJ, and especially to these federal oversight people. They're called monitors, and they're typically not even living locally. They're living across the country, not even a hands-on approach to the agency, but they're getting paid millions. Travis Yates pointed out that there are other instances for the DOJ's method that have come under question, including a recent hearing in Louisville, where the DOJ allegedly refused to provide specific examples to justify their consent decree, which is typical. That's what happened in Phoenix. And criticisms from a former DOJ statistician in Seattle, as well as a rebuttal report from Springfield, citing numerous errors in the federal agency's findings. Now, it goes on and says that Yates said that the situation in Phoenix revealed a broken system of federal police reform that has led to negative consequences in numerous cities. Basically, there's no success story for the most part where the DOJ has taken over an agency. Now, it goes on to say that the lawsuits also against Louisville, Kentucky, Minneapolis, Minnesota police departments, that those were filed late in the Biden administration. They accused both departments of widespread unconstitutional policing practices, but the DOJ is now stating that the lawsuits wrongly equated statistical disparities with intentional discrimination and heavily relied on flawed methodologies and incomplete data. So in other words, when you're showing that one group is getting hit, like blacks, you know, Hispanics, you know, Asians, whites more than another, you know, and the DOJ saying automatically, ah, it's discrimination, you know, it's illegal. You know, they're saying, the DOJ saying, you know, the way they came to their conclusions is wrong. This is the new Trump DOJ saying that. Furthermore, the department criticized the proposed sweeping consent decrees, arguing that they went far beyond the Biden administration's accusations of unconstitutional conduct and that they would have imposed years of micromanagement of local police departments by federal courts and expensive independent monitors, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars of compliance costs without a legally and factually adequate basis for doing so. And just in the last part, I want to give kudos to the Assistant Attorney General, Harmeet K. Dillon of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division, sharply criticized the previous administration's approach. So that's what we have, gentlemen. I'm curious, you know, what you think. I know, Jeff Winninger, you were in charge of Rampart after, you know, what went down there with LAPD, and you actually, you know, the DOJ, I think, had already stepped in at that time when they put you in place to kind of clean it up. So you, you know, you out of everybody here may have more of an insight into this, but I, you also have the benefit of being on the show with Travis Yates the other day too. So Jeff Winninger.
Yeah, I would say that my experience with the LAPD was that things were so bad that we needed a consent decree, and it was justified at that time. Now, this was back in the late 90s when they were conducting their investigation, and the consent decree was actually implemented in 2001, I believe, or 2001.
I remember that. You know, I was a kid, yeah. And I couldn't read the paper yet. My parents read that story to me when you were in charge of Rampart. That was pretty cool.
Back when I had hair. Yeah. But, I highly respect and got hold Dr. Travis Yates with, you know, in the highest regard. And, you know, some of the things that he's identified that have been mentioned relative to why the current DOJ is rescinding these investigations. You know, I find that stuff to be troubling and most likely appropriate. You know, but the reality is what I think really is the problem is where you have the 10th Amendment, where you have the state and the federal government trying to get involved in state matters. And, you know, really there's, you know, I don't think that this doesn't absolve law enforcement of the need to improve, to emulate what the best practices in law enforcement happen to be. I think there's a lot of room for improvement, especially in, like when I ran the Rampart gang unit, was this running of specialized units as well as search warrant protocols and practices in that process and, you know, use of force type stuff. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's incumbent upon our law enforcement leaders nationwide to accept the blueprint that is actually out there for improving law enforcement and implementing the best practices. Because of the lessons that we learned over two decades ago with LAPD, I'm still seeing many large law enforcement agencies making the same mistakes we made. And that shouldn't really happen. We need to control our own destiny as law enforcement officers throughout this country and learn from others' mistakes and make sure that we're implementing best practices.
Well, thank you. Hey, Chuck, about a minute and 20 seconds, buddy.
Hey, I generally agree with Jeff. LAPD was a little bit unique. Having lived through a consent decree, I can understand why you wouldn't want to be under one. There were arguably some aspects of our consent decree that I don't think were necessary. But really the article says that, consent decrees have been part of policing for a long time. That's really not true. It's only been about the last 20 years. What's concerning is when they get agendized, which appears to have been what's happened here. And now it's a cascading of consent decrees across the country. I haven't done my research, so I'm just speaking kind of off cuff here. But that's where I kind of see that the sense I'm feeling is that there's, an anti-police sentiment to the past DOJ that resulted in a lot of these consent decrees either occurring or beginning to occur.
Well, thanks, Lieutenant Chuck. In all fairness, the original article I sent you guys, I think it was a Fox article, but then I replaced it with the Tampa Bay Free Press article, which I thought was better. Commercial break, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, as police officers, we all know that we can buy gear from just about any place, especially when you're looking online. You've got a lot of choices, but I want to remind you guys about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. Now, I don't know of a company that does that better or fits that bill better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who protect, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. Now, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations, including this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor and go to Gauls.com, and they're going to do you one better. For the loyal listeners of this show, you can use radio code, or you can use code radio15, radio15, and they're going to give you 15% off your next purchase until June the 31st at Gauls.com. What a huge opportunity. Again, the code is radio15. They have gift cards also. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card. That'll be your new best friends. If you haven't been there lately, go there today, Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. We left off talking about really a fantastic story. One of our very own panelists, Major Travis Yates. He's also known as Dr. Travis Yates. He's retired from the Tulsa Police Department. It's been about 2 years since he retired. And he started, helping Phoenix Police Department out when he started reviewing the DOJ's case against the Phoenix when they were wanting them to enter into a consent decree with the federal government. And he found out that basically 97% of the stuff that they said happened, the bad stuff that happened to justify the federal government wanting to take over Phoenix Police with a consent decree, it was fabricated, not true. And he has been trying to get this story out there, and they've got proof, and they've got it on the website and stuff. TravisYates.org is a website you can go to get more information. But the story got picked up this week by the Tampa Free Press, and our buddies over there, Brian Burns, he runs that thing. And so the TampaFP.com picked it up, and then it got picked up by MSN. And wow, wouldn't you know it, this week, the DOJ is retracting the case against Phoenix, and not just Phoenix, but Louisville and a lot of other places too. It's really the Trump DOJ. It's a new DOJ. And I want to personally thank them for doing that. Thank you to Pam Bondi, who I'm sure had a hand in this as well, for making sure the right thing happened. So I find it refreshing. And you know what? Never think that we cannot accomplish big things. And, it's also our third week on satellite radio. So I like to think that we played at least a small part in getting the story out there, and that the ears that need to hear it heard it, and they took action on it relatively, swiftly. So, and then sometimes it's just connecting the dots to the people. Getting all the people together to get the story out there. Guys, anything else on this? If you're ready to move on to the next one, Chuck?
Just real quick, Chip. I just think, I fear that this will be a short-lived experience for us in law enforcement. The minute a Democrat gets back into office, I think you're going to see a pendulum swing in the other direction. But, you know, we'll take the wins when we can get them, and we'll see what the future holds.
I get it. I think the key is, you know, I applaud the chief in Minneapolis, who, although the DOJ efforts to take over that department are being rescinded, you know, there was a state entity that investigated that organization and came up with the recommendations for improvements. And he's continuing to follow through with that. And you'd mentioned some of that, where he's appointing some civilians to some high ranking positions. And, you know, the article that, that you cited, you know, they say, you know, it's, you know, this is something new. To be honest with you, it isn't for what Chuck's and my experience had been. You know, William Bratton was our chief from 2002 to 2009. And he brought in a number of civilians at very high ranking positions. He brought in attorney Jerry Chaliff to oversee the constitutional policing. And he had John Miller that was also with him and NYPD, brought him over, and he was oversaw the intelligence and counterterrorism efforts of the LAPD. And you had Mary Grady that was brought in to handle the media relations with her expertise, rather than having sworn personnel oversee those people. And then, you know, Arif Alakon was brought in, I believe, under Chief Charlie Beck
to oversee constitutional
policing. And, you know, it's sometimes an advantage to have people that see things a little differently, and to have their, you know, their opinions and their thoughts shared at the table. Because like I've always said, it's not about being right, it's about getting it right. And that requires that you listen to everybody and have and diversified backgrounds and experiences. Having that at the table will tend to lend itself to giving you the best opportunity to make the best decisions. So that wasn't new for Chuck or myself. And I work closely with all those people, and no problem whatsoever, and respected every one of them, you know, with held them in very high regard.
Well, in our next article, WOC1420.iHeart.com and Fox9.com, Governor Reynolds signs law getting rid of citizen police review boards, which you kind of just, you know, hinted on some of the stuff, Jeff. So Des Moines, Iowa, we've got cities in Iowa will need to get rid of boards that oversee police under a new law. Now, I got two stories back to back, which are like completely opposite of each other. So this one, they're getting rid of these citizen police review boards. They generally provide, according to our article at least, more sets of eyes on allegations of police misconduct. They make recommendations to the city. They have no real power. It's not binding, but they make recommendations. Supporters of the bill say it protects police from political interventions, while opponents say the boards help improve relationships between communities and their police departments. At least six Iowa cities will have to dissolve a board that falls under the definition, and Senate file 311 is actually what it's called. It's one of 25 bills that Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law on Monday. And I know that a lot of the times it's really not necessarily who you appoint to the boards. It's not the board itself, it's who you appoint to it. And I know they say there's something about police community relations. Even here in Tampa, we finally went down that rabbit hole with these boards. I've seen mixed results, but then I've seen how they do it. Like even in Oakland, California, where they were openly soliciting convicted felons to join such boards, which is just ridiculous. Let's jump over to Minneapolis PD now. We just read this one article in Iowa. So now we got Minneapolis PD. They bring in civilians to lead internal affairs, constitutional policing bureaus. I have to admit that when you read the credentials of the people they put in place as civilians, it is rather impressive. So Minneapolis, so the first time ever, the Minneapolis Police Department, they've hired civilians to serve in high-ranking roles, including overseeing the internal affairs unit. I'm sure that's going to be, there's a lot of people who are upset about that. But at a news conference on Monday, Minneapolis Police Chief Ryan O'Hara introduced Adelie Famdu, the new chief of the Internal Affairs Bureau, and Ganeshaw Martin, who will lead the Constitutional Policing Bureau of the department. And police say this will be the first time non-sworn employees or members will serve in such high-ranking positions. But the one over IA, Assistant Attorney General, Consent Decree Counsel, Department of Human Rights, a felony prosecutor, but also a public defender and medical malpractice defense attorney. You know, so you've got, you know, those things, you know, going. And then you've got the other one, Chief of Staff, Legislative Affairs, Community Engagement Bureau. They really got some well-rounded people to fill these roles. So surprisingly. Guys, we're going to go to the commercial break, and we're going to talk about that when we get back. So hold those thoughts. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about MyTech. And you know, in today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety, and it's about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. Now, MyTech, this is where they come in. This is their wheelhouse. They're a division of Compliant Technologies, and MyTech provides advanced protective solutions designed for law enforcement, corrections, and first responders. Now, their Eagle Protect nitrile gloves, they offer four-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. And their MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers, they actually eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact, and they continue the kill for up to 28 days, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. And when safety is non-negotiable, trust MyTech to deliver the protection that you need. You can learn more about how to equip your team today at compliantechnologies.com/MyTech. Again, go to compliantechnologies.com/MyTech because the best defense starts with the right protection. Now let's go to Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to bluethegold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to bluethegold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, they just did one on breaking news. Supreme Court issues major use of force decision in Barnes versus Felix. You can sign up at bluethegold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game because, frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. Bluethegold.com. Again, that is bluethegold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. We've got Lieutenant Jeff Winninger from LAPD on the show, and also Lieutenant Chuck Springer, formerly with LAPD as well. So thank you guys so much. You know, we just covered a couple of things. You know, what is it? Iowa, they're getting rid of police complaint review boards. And but then in Minneapolis, they're putting civilians in charge of certain high profile divisions like internal affairs. And so we just described what they're doing across the country in these two areas. What do you guys think about that? And Jeff, you had just touched on that when we were talking about some LAPD stuff that you and Chuck had experience and had experience there, you know, locally in California. Chuck, you want to start us off?
Yeah, no, I've got some mixed opinions here. I agree with Jeff. It's always good to have an extra set of eyes and ears come into your organization to improve what you're doing. I think it's going to be challenging for them because I do think it's important to have been there, done that when it comes to police administration. I certainly wouldn't want to see, you know, waking up in the future and everybody in a command staff position is now a civilian. And it's just the grunts that are sworn. I don't know that we'll get there, but I don't think that would be good either. As far as the police review boards go, I think there's an importance to them because there's community buy-in and you have to have that. The problem comes in, you know, how are they staffed? Usually they're the mayor's lackeys, right? They supported the mayor in an election and they want to pad their resume. You know, I have problems with that makeup. I have problems with commissions that are made up. You know, we had the Christopher Commission in the 1990s in LAPD. And the problem really is that law enforcement is only 10% application of law. It's 90% dealing with people. And you impanel these panels with mostly lawyers. Rarely do you have anybody with, you know, sworn experience on these commissions and panels. So I think there's a problem with how they're staffed. I don't know that there's a magic formula with how you staff them to make them as efficient and productive as they could be. But, you know, I think it's a mistake to get rid of them altogether.
I got you. You know, I have to admit, guys, that when I looked at the resume of the female that's going to now be in charge of IA, and look, the idea rubs me the wrong way. But if you're going to put a civilian in charge of IA, she was a public defender. When you read her credentials, now although she was a prosecutor, there are so many hints to her being more of a lenient, you know, public defender, you know, kind of ish person. I think that she would be more of a crusader for a cop that was being accused of something. Than most people that civilians that would be put in that position. That's just the draw that I got from looking at the jobs that she's held. Because I mean, let's face it, when, you know, public defenders and people that are police review people, you know, they have a tendency to really not back up the police and doing what they're doing and stuff.
Well, it's ironic. It's ironic that you say that, Chip, because LAPD introduced all civilian panels for their Board of Rights as an option a number of years ago. And they found that they were more lenient than they were versus command staff panels. And now the department wants to get rid of them.
I was actually going to bring that up. I mean, you know, they made the change where you could have an entirely civilian board, and people aren't happy. They say they're way too lenient, and you know, now they want to get rid of it. And it's just like Chuck said, and it's perplexing because the reality is, Chuck and Chip, we all know, due to our time in law enforcement, that the organization itself can be toxic in how it treats people through internal affairs investigations and that entire process on whether they sustain or exonerate somebody and a particular, complaint. So bringing in my mind, civilians, it kind of balanced that out, some biases that may be either, you know, good or bad for the sworn personnel. But, you know, my experience, you know, Chuck and I, we both worked what was called at the time Use of Force Review Division, and we oversaw the writing of the Chief of Police rationale that's submitted to the Honorable Board of Police Commissioners for all officer-involved shootings and lethal force cases. And we had to deal with the Inspector General's office of the city of Los Angeles. Because what occurs is when we have an officer involved shooting, they have a representative there and they will submit a parallel report to the Board of Police Commissioners with their recommendations for the findings. And listen, you know, it was my experience that we had strong relationships with these people. Now, does that mean I always agreed with them? No. But I certainly wanted to hear what they had to say. And there was very many times when I thought, wow, I never thought of that. Good point. And it made me better at what I did. And at times it expanded my thought process in the depth in which I was looking at an investigation. So I truly believe that it is appropriate to have oversight entities that are civilian driven. I believe it's important to build the confidence that the public's going to have in the police department, but it also just makes the police department better. Because once again, you're listening to diverse voices. And there were plenty of times where we disagreed, but you disagree respectfully. And then you take it to the police commission in closed session and you articulate your rationale for your position. And then ultimately the commissioners would make their decision as the final adjudicators of those particular cases. But really, you know, the public needs to just feel safe, valued, and respected. And having some type of civilian oversight or review boards is a step in accomplishing that.
I get it. Well, some fascinating stuff going on. Thank you for breaking it down, though. Definitely, I found it very interesting what you said about the actual outcome of having civilians in charge in some of those areas, which is surprising. And I wonder if that changes from location to jurisdiction to, you know, I wonder if that changes even from like red to blue states. I wonder if that changes. So that's interesting. If you guys are ready to move on to the video portion of the show, and Jeff, I was going to put up the one that you had requested. Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. We have a deputy body cam footage that shows a deadly shooting of a wanted registered sex offender in DeSoto County. So Jeff, that is the one you wanted to get to today, correct? All right, great. So, and look, if you're listening to the show audibly, podcast, radio station, we are going to describe in great detail what's going on so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a video that you absolutely have to see, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel the very next day at 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. Producer Will puts up a special version of the live show. It's recorded, but he'll actually embed every video that we talked about the previous day. Pictures of the good guys and the bad guys pop up. It's a great way to watch a show. So that, again, is on a Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable, starting at 9 o'clock Eastern time. The very next morning. So on this one, we're in Arcadia, Florida, and we've got a DeSoto County Sheriff's Office. They released body cam footage from a January shooting in Arcadia that left a registered sex offender dead and a deputy was injured.
Tony, Arcadia, Florida, 28, 27. Romeo 400-557-94-3500.
10-23.
Step out of the vehicle for me.
Stop, stop,
So according to the agency, they got a call from a from another sheriff's office, the Fortress County Sheriff's Office in Georgia, about a guy with an active warrant. And he was the active warrant was for enticing a child for indecent purposes. So the deputies discovered that this guy, Matthew Stephen Raleigh, 30 years old, was a registered sex offender, but he did not register when he got to DeSoto County, which was required by law. So at approximately 2:16 in the morning, so it's early on a Saturday, January the 25th, deputies, they do a traffic stop on a vehicle that they thought that he was in, and it's in Raleigh. So two people were in the vehicle, or they thought that it was occupied by Raleigh. So two people were in the vehicle. The deputies do identify our bad guy as the passenger in the car. So we've got a deputy dealing with the driver on the driver's side and another deputy dealing with the target, you know, the suspect on the passenger side. Now, as deputies are working to confirm the identity of the passenger, the sheriff's office said that our bad guy, Raleigh, he arms himself with a firearm and he opens the door. He strikes one of the deputies multiple times, and it looked like that deputy was on the driver's side and that the female driver had just exited the car before that went down. And deputies end up returning fire. They strike the bad guy, and the bad guy ends up dying at the scene. The agency said that the injured deputy was at home recovering. This thing goes down really, really fast. And even here looking at my show notes, you see that he reaches for the firearm and then he starts shooting at the female was on the passenger side of the car on his side, and he shoots at her male partner on the driver's side, but it goes down fast and there's a shootout. Even the male partner ends up, I believe, going down and returning fire. They've got freeze frames and all kinds of stuff that let you kind of get a good look at what was going on. If you know, that's not in real time because, you know, you miss a lot. Guys, we got about 45 seconds. Maybe 30 seconds before we go to commercial break. Commentary on this one? But not everybody at once. All right, Jeff Winninger, get about 15 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, the reason I requested that we talk about this one is because there's a number of court cases that give the authority of law enforcement officers to do certain things during these stops, which could have benefited them tactically. And I'd like to talk about that when we come back from the break.
All right. I love it. All right, guys, stay tuned. This could be a great story to cover. And then we've got another one as well. So, guys, stick with us. We got another guy in a wheelchair coming up in a video. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us into trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. And hey, you can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Apianko. Now, the course had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies. We've even got forensic organizations and police departments nationwide. Now, if you're listening to the show and you've got your own agency, your chief or sheriff, they've got a great deal for you. The founder, Dan O'Kelly, is working it out to where you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Great opportunity. Go to gunlearn.com to learn more. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. So, you know, we left off and we were talking about this video where we've got this bad guy on the passenger side of the vehicle, sex offender, and they stop him. And so they're just trying to verify his name and stuff before they, you know, before, you know, he's wanted. And well, he's wanted because he, you know, registered sex offenders. Whenever you move or go anywhere, you have to notify the authorities, you know, where you're at so they can keep tabs on you. He didn't do that. So they were out looking for him. And he goes for a gun. and the female and the driver on the passenger side, which is where our bad guy was at, our bad guy, instead of hitting her first, he goes for her partner that's on the driver's side. And the female driver had already exited the vehicle, if I remember correctly. And the partner, male partner, I believe goes down, returns fire, but then the female ends up getting in the gunfight too. So it's really two against one bad, you know, the bad guy, the guy you want to, you know, to, if anyone's going to die, you want to be the bad guy. So that's the good news out of all this, although the male deputy ended up getting hurt. Guys, what do you think about Chuck? Why don't you start us off on this one? What do you think about this?
Well, I think Jeff wanted to make some comments first.
Yeah, I think he was hoping that you would go first and then he could just clean up anything that you said. He could kind of like, you know, basically take your credibility away after you said it, but I'm just, you know, I'm just shooting.
I'll talk on it briefly and then give it over to Jeff. You know, what's unclear from the video, obviously the subsequent investigation would hopefully clean this up, but what made them think that he was in this car? If you think it's him, my preference is get the guy out right away and cuff him up. The longer you wait, the longer you give the bad guy an opportunity to think about what they're going to do. Now, I don't know if that was the case or not. You know, once he reaches for the gun, it's game over. Now you're just involved in a straight up gunfight. My only suggestion is pay attention to your front sight or your red dot. I think the gal went to slide lock, but she got the better of them and she walked away. So good for her. Other than that, it was pretty much a straight up caper.
Gotcha. All right. Now, yeah. What did Chuck say wrong, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely nothing. I'll just piggyback on it. You know, it's Pennsylvania versus Mims. It's a 1977 case, and that gives you the authority to order the driver out of the car. And then in 1997, Maryland versus Wilson gave you the authority to order the passenger out. And then in 2007, there's another case, Brenlin, I believe it was, versus California. And that allows you to detain the passenger. And all of these are Supreme Court rulings that they give deference to officer safety. And that's why they allow these actions to take place. Because why? By doing so, it enhances your ability to maximize your safety as an officer. So in this case, you had a vehicle that had quite a bit of belongings packed in it, and it looked like he retrieved the gun from somewhere between the two front seats where it was secreted before he engaged the officer that was on the driver's side. And the reality is you want to get them out of the environment that they're familiar with as soon as you can and put them into the environment that they're not, which is standing on the side of the road handcuffed. You're limiting quite a bit what they can actually do to cause you harm. And in this case, it more than likely would have prevented this. It still may have gone to guns at the moment you order men out initially, but you're not giving him the opportunity to run it through his head and plan what actions he's going to take to assault you as a police officer. So it's just really important to understand that, you know, these cases went to the Supreme Court. They ruled in our favor as law enforcement officers. So let's use those rulings to our favor to improve our officer safety in these types of instances. Now, I got to tell you, that female, I got to tell you, I was very impressed with her. She engaged this guy. And then she went up and she made sure that the threat was gone. She was intentional, deliberate in her actions, and I was really impressed with her response. Oftentimes, regardless of gender, we've seen officers that don't perform at that high level, and she was really impressive.
Yeah, she wasn't running away, and even if they didn't close the distance. You did say one thing, though. My FCC sensors are asking me to clarify what you said. You said that the gun was between the seats where it was, did you say secreted?
It looked like they had a lot of belongings in the back seat of the.
I think it's the word. Secreted. What was the word you used? My FCC people are asking me to clarify that word. So never mind. I just want to make sure it wasn't like a transfer of bodily fluids or anything going on there that I missed. So, all right.
No. It's another word for hidden.
okay. Just making sure. Okay. Chuck, help me out. Help me get out from this.
No, yeah, you're fine, Chip. Just to tag on Jeff a little bit, you know, when he talks about these rulings that were designed to enhance officer safety, when you're enhancing officer safety, you're by default also enhancing suspect safety, right? If you get this guy out and cuff him up, maybe the OIS never happens, like Jeff mentioned. So if there's a benefit to the public as well.
That's a good point. It's not like we go to work every day saying we can't wait to shoot and kill a bad guy. I mean, right. I mean, and I say it a number of times, the longer you're in law enforcement, at least with me and the guys that I ran with, there's a value to the human life. There's a value to the life period that we all get. It's a huge responsibility. It's a heavy weight. But we get it. And the longer the injustices that you see, the things that you see, people dying, you know, and your whole, we understand how valuable it is. And we don't want it to be a bad guy either. Now, when it comes to it, whether it's going to be him or us, it's a clear decision, right? But yeah, we don't want to be in a position where we have to make that call. And we've got another story with a video component. It's not the dog. So Jeff should not mind covering this. It's the guy in the wheelchair. We covered a wheelchair yesterday. It was an old guy in an old folks home with a knife, and the British people, they gassed him. They hit him with the expandable baton, and they tasered him, and that didn't look good. So if you guys are okay, let's jump to this one real quick. Rumble.com, this is Butter again. Footage released to Austin police officer fatally shooting a guy in a wheelchair who's wielding. It ended up being a BB gun, but it was a Glock replica.
Put your hands up!
What's your hands?
Drop the gun!
What's the gun? Drop the gun!
Let me see your hands! Drop the gun!
Hands up!
Put your hands out!
Austin, Texas. Guy in wheelchair shot and killed by Austin police. He allegedly pointed the BB gun. Well, we got a video of it pointing at the cops in South Austin. And on Saturday morning, so they say it's a second officer-involved shooting in the last 10 days, but Austin Police Chief Lisa Davis, she gave the account of it. The guy is blocking traffic, holding what appeared to be a gun. And so the cavalry gets there. When they get there, they see this guy. He's got a weapon in his lap. He attempts to evade police because he's wheeling up the ramp on the bridge in the wheelchair. And there's like traffic just like going by him. So we finally get a marked unit to block the traffic. But now he's at the top of the bridge. You've got a cop out following him, and the cop's got a freaking rifle. He's got a long gun. I love it. So the subject turns his wheelchair, faces the officer, and then he starts moving backwards. But he's facing the officer. At that time, the officer starts giving him more commands, drop the gun. And now it escalates to where the guy raises the gun. He points it at the officer. And we know this because a drive-by, you know, pedestrian or drive-by, you know, vehicle, they have a cell phone, civilian cell phone cam of it. And you can see the guy holding the gun right when you hear the shots are being fired. And unfortunately, the chief says the guy ended up, you know, dying. He got shot, taken out by the guy, by the cop with the rifle and stuff. It was a replica. Doesn't matter. Your commentary, gentlemen, about a minute and 15 seconds left. Jeff, you want to start us off with this one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you know, the key on this is trying to control the environment. Prior to engaging the guy, it would have been nice to get out some information and get that bridge. It looked like he was on a bridge, you know, contained, where you're stopping the traffic and you're minimizing the risk to innocent citizens. You know, the reality is he fired a number of rounds with that rifle, and I'm not sure all of them hit its intended target. So, you know, I've been in charge of officer-involved shooting incidents where long guns have been used, and you find rounds over a mile away embedded in apartment complexes. So, you know, you need to be cognizant of that and careful.
Good point. I think it was the fifth shot, maybe, where the guy slumped over in the wheelchair, maybe the sixth shot where he actually fell out of it. But Chuck Springer?
Real quick, and I know we're coming up on the deadline here, but first of all, make sure your gun's loaded when you get out of the car. You're charging it, you know, down the road. It's not a good idea. Number two, try to stay with your car, especially in that environment. You got cover with your car. You don't have it if you're walking up the bridge.
Yeah, All good points. See, you guys don't miss a thing. I love it. I love it. So very, very good points. Hey, another great show. Thank you so much, Jeff Wininger and Chuck Springer from LAPD. And Chuck, Jeff, why don't you tell everybody how you get more information about that book, On Thin Ice, and that cool cover. Hold it up for the camera, please, for the video portion, please. You got to love that.
Well, yeah, like you said, Chuck, it's called On Thin Ice. And that's not Chuck on the cover because it's he's a little muscular to be Chuck or Chip for that matter. But you can go to jeffwininger.com. And if you can't spell my name, I've made it easier. You can go to onthinicebook.com.
Love it. There you go, guys. Also want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. A shout out to our sponsors, Gauls Compliant Technologies, Gunlearn, Blue the Gold, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, Two Bells, also TampaFP.com, RedVoiceMedia.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.